and welcome to the Canadian Baseball Network podcast. My name is Peter Bean, and I'll be your host. Joining me today is Andrew Hendricks and CBN founder Bob Elliott. Thanks for coming back, guys. All right, so for today's episode, we're going to break down draft day two and preview draft day three. I want to start with yesterday, which was kind of a surprise. We had one of the lighter days in recent memory for day two within the draft. What do you think was the cause of that, Bob?
Well, I think the cause is signability. I mean, players ask for X, and clubs say X is too much, so they say we'll see you later. But I mean, there was three guys taken, and you know that's that equals. Like last year there was five. I think you'd have to go back to 2008 to find when there was only two guys taken. So I mean it does not like in 2008 there was I think there's 32 guys the rest of the way. So I mean the first 10 rounds there's still whatever three quarters of it to go. So it was not a strong class, like projected to be a strong class, but I still think there'll be some players selected.
You mentioned signability. Next question for you is regarding Zach Pop. We've passed the point where Zach Pop really has any shot of joining the professional ranks this year. He's going to school, right?
I don't know. I mean, he's got a good scholarship offer from Kentucky, but if he changes his mind, I guess he could sign if he's picked like Kellogg went in the 12th round and went to Arizona State, but young men change their mind. I don't know what's... I haven't spoken to the boy, so, I mean, if he wants to go to school, that's his choice, you know.
Well, he was looking for fourth-round money, right? Fourth or fifth?
That's what a couple of scouts said. So now we're going to start at the 11th, so there's kind of a ceiling on that, the amount that they can pay out. But, you know, I would never say 100% on anything.
Looking at the draft list... and the players that are in the top 10 that remain on it, some that remain undrafted other than Zach Pop, Mitchell Robinson, Michael Foster, Cody Chartrand, Jean-Francois Garon, Ben Onishko, Chris Shaw. Any of those fall under your list of signability issues or people that you think are likely not going to be selected today because of that?
Well, Robinson has a good scholarship offer, Peter, and Chartrand, he has eligibility at Lewis and Clark, and he pitched well at the NAIA World Series. So, but he can return and give it another go. So, I'm not sure, and that's none of my business what they tell the teams. You know the. We try and build a, since you can't guess on signability, we try and build the draft list off of talent, off what is the, okay, this is the best talent, this is number two, this is number three, and then just the same way Baseball America or Perfect Game does it, and then, you know, if they sign, they sign, if they don't sign, they don't, but I would think Onishko's got a very good school in Stetson. That's where Kevin Nicholson went, and Garon, he might be an easier one. Foster has eligibility at Northeastern, so you know it's every but the risk some of the college guys. Make. I don't think. Foster's only a sophomore, but the risk that the if you wait till the senior year, you don't have a lot of leverage. Remember the 1 year, the Blue Jays went. I think it was the first year that they went to this style. They drafted like from the fifth to the 10th round. They drafted just seniors. saved money and gave everybody $10,000, and one guy they gave $1,000 to. So they just gave the guy a chance to play, and he was happy, or else he wouldn't have signed it. So it all depends on what these guys if they've negotiated so high, or if they want to alter things, you know.
All right, let's talk about the two Canadians that were drafted yesterday. Let's start with Jordan Romano, drafted by the Blue Jays, third Canadian overall, first Canadian to be drafted by the Jays. What do you guys know about Jordan?
Well, Peter, I know that he didn't allow a home run at all in 2013, which is pretty impressive for any pitcher, given the amount of innings he pitched. Obviously, he's a local guy. He's from the GTA area. And he appeared, I think, exclusively, or the majority of his appearance were in relief last year. I could be wrong about that, but he seems to have a good build. He's a strong, tall guy, and he projects well out of a reliever role. I don't know if they're going to try to stretch him out if they can get a deal done, but certainly looks impressive from what I've read. Bob, have you heard anything on him?
Well, his brother Chris was very influential in his development, from what I'm told, and both boys, they're from Markham, and they played for the Ontario Blue Jays, and they went to Connor State and then transferred, which a lot of guys do, and that's a pretty good program, Oral Roberts, and he won the conference closer of the year, which is nothing to shake a stick at, and as you said, didn't give up a homer in 49 innings or whatever it was, so that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, those numbers were impressive. 40 and two-thirds innings, walked only 17 and struck out 49. That's definitely impressive. Hopefully we'll have an interview with Jordan on a podcast later today. We're trying to reach him now. But we weren't able to get him on for this episode. We were able to get the second overall drafted Canadian, Brock Dykeshorn, onto the show earlier this morning. Before we listen to that interview, give me a quick scouting report for people who don't know or haven't read up on Brock.
Well, he started at West Virginia. He transferred. He went to Central Arizona, which is a strong JUCO conference, and he led the nation in strikeouts. And he's a big guy. He's been compared to John Rauch that threw for the Blue Jays. It doesn't all the power scouts thought they went to see when they saw the guy go to the bullpen. It wasn't there, but what all I saw was outs and strikeouts. So that's what made him so attractive. And he has an option to go to school for next year, but we'll see what happens with whether the Houstons spend some money or Brock continues on with the education.
It sounded to me, and you'll hear this in the interview, I didn't flat out ask him if he had a deal in place, but it sounds to me like he does. It sounds to me like the deal is done from the interview, but let's take a listen to that now and you can tell me what you think. I wanted to ask you if you could walk me through the important events of the last few days leading up to yesterday when you heard your name called.
Yeah, I got here in Mankato, Minnesota, probably about 2 weeks ago. I'm here in the Northwoods League with the Mankato Moondogs. I just wanted to get over here and get a few innings in yet before the draft, just to kind of stay sharp and such. And then kind of as the week went on, kept getting phone calls from different teams and different organizations, asking kind of where I thought I wanted to be and what I was looking for, just so they had a good idea where they thought they could take me. And then I didn't really hear too much the last couple of days until about 5 minutes before the pick. Houston called me and asked me a few questions and if I'd be willing to sign. And I pretty much said yeah on their offer. And then they asked me how to pronounce my name, and then that was about it. And then they drafted me.
Now, this was your second time through the draft. What was different this time?
Yeah, I think out of high school, it was kind of more... kind of a shot in the dark in high school. If I got drafted, that was great. But I didn't really have any expectations out of high school. Just kind of watched, and whatever happened, happened. This time I had a little bit more expectations for myself. I had a really good season this year at Central Arizona, and I talked to pretty much every scout, or a scout from every team. So I had a little bit more expectations on this draft, and where I felt I should go was higher than where I was in high school.
You mentioned your season last year in college. You had a pretty good season last year. Was there anything that you changed going into last year that allowed you, especially, to rack up that many strikeouts?
Yeah, basically, really the only thing I changed was I added a third pitch, the slider. All my life, I've just been a fastball changeup pitcher through high school and my first year of college, just fastball changeups. And it was effective for me, but it was more ground ball, fly ball kind of outs. So I figured I'd add a slider just to have that third pitch, maybe throw some guys off for timing and such. And that's the pitch that ended up getting me so many strikeouts, which was pretty effective for me this year.
Who is your biggest influence going through your development leading up to this drafting?
I've had a ton of people that have helped me out. I'd say from day one it's been my dad. He's kind of been there on my side just to, either when I'm down, pick me up, or when I'm up, he kind of settles me down a bit. Not trying to get too excited or too down. He's just always there, helping me out and always supportive of me.
Now, you told Alexis that you checked our draft list on a regular basis. Did you notice on the last day your rise to the second spot?
Yeah, I did see that.
Last question I have for you. Did you read the article about having one of the best names in the draft, and did you happen to catch any of the reactions online after you were drafted?
Yeah, I did. I did read the article about the names. It was pretty funny because even out of high school when I got drafted, I know there was a lot of reaction about my name and stuff. It's just kind of one of those things with the draft. I have some fun with it. I haven't seen any reactions yet from this year's draft. I've been kind of busy with everybody else congratulating me and stuff, so I'm sure I'll get to that at some point, looking through some of the blogs and comments and such. But yeah, it's fun just having that along with the draft, just have some fun with it.
So what's next? I'm assuming you have to make contact with the Astros.
Yeah, I talked to the guy last night from Arizona. So I think I'm going to leave here from Minnesota, go back home for a little bit while they kind of get all the paperwork done and all the contract, and I have to sign all that stuff. So I'll be home for that. And then basically once that's done and I get all my work visa and all that kind of stuff straightened out, I'll be going out with the Astros. They haven't said exactly where I'm going to be yet, but the guy said there's a chance I'll be going to the Appalachian League, and their team's in Greensville, Tennessee.
You got to be excited about joining that organization. They have an incredibly bright future.
Yeah, for sure. I know the last 3 years their big league team hasn't been up to par, really, but, I mean, all the young prospects they got in there, some amazing talent, even from this year's draft, Brady Aiken, Mark Appel from last year. There's some amazing talent there that, I mean, if I get to work with some of those guys, that'd be pretty incredible just to, I mean, I can learn from them and maybe they can learn a little bit from me, I don't know, but it'll be pretty cool to see all these young guys and work with them. And, I mean, at the end of the day, still trying to beat them out of a spot, but it'll be pretty cool to meet all those guys and work with them.
All right, we're back. So you can see there, towards the end of that interview, it really does sound like
he's gone.
He's got a deal.
Yeah, he's gone. Good for him. Good for him. That sounds like an incredibly mature young man. 2 years advance. That sounds congratulations to him and his family. I don't know. Inspector Clouseau, number two, what do you grasp from that, Andrew?
Well, I really liked how he talked about adding the slider into his repertoire of pitches. I think that's definitely a benefit. Certainly helped him with the strikeout totals. And you're right. It sounds like he's got a very bright future ahead of him. I mean, Peter touched it in the interview. Houston's got an amazing farm system coming up. You know, with all the first-round picks they've had in the past couple of years, and the fact that, you know, we're starting to see signs of what that team is going to be able to do in the next coming years, even now. You start getting some of these, you know, young prospects in there, and himself included, in that mix later down the road. I think it's definitely going to be an exciting time for not only that organization, but for the players as well.
But I don't think there's any doubt that he's agreed and everything's all set.
I'd agree, yeah. Sounds like he's a pretty...
The thing is, watching the draft, what I find hilarious is these first-round picks, they're all sitting in front of the TV, and the guy is, like, hearing his name, and everybody's screaming. And now, maybe he kept it a secret from his family, but all that stuff, it's all arranged, you know? Like, nobody's pulling the name out of a hat and saying, we hope we can sign this guy. Unless it's, hey, will you... up that high, unless they're assured that the guy will that they can get it done, you know.
Absolutely.
So let's take a look at today and what we can expect for today. The first thing I wanted to ask you in regards to day three, Bob, is can we expect a flurry of Canadians to be drafted today, just based on how light it was yesterday? Or are you thinking that this could end up being one of our lighter drafts in recent memory?
I think what were we 22 last year? So like we spoke the other night with Alan Simpson, you know, like some guys were saying it could be 6, some guys were saying it could be 20. So I think 3 is not a forecaster of what 3 in the first 10 does not necessarily tell us what's going to lie ahead. There's going to be some senior signs. There's going to be some high school kids that have told teams, hey, I want to go and play. I don't want to go to school. I want a chance. So, you know, there's 30 rounds for that to happen.
Give me your prediction. How many do you see going today?
What did I have yesterday? I had 4 and there was 3. I'll take 15 today.
Well, that would be a good day. Andrew, what do you think? Any predictions on number of Canadians to go today?
Well, Bob is the authority, so I'm going to agree with whatever he says on this. and the fact that, you know, in the later rounds you do end up, you know, talking with players that, you know, are either senior eligible or this is kind of the last go around. So the likelihood to sign guys like that, and this is no discredit to the player. It's just the simple fact of the matter that this may be, you know, essentially one of their last shots to get into professional baseball. You do see the numbers jump up quite rapidly, so I would agree somewhere around, you know, the mid-teens. Yep.
What about
the
Blue Jays?
If you're going to agree with me, I'll go one higher then.
Anything that you're watching?
We have to remember what's really hurt Peter and Andrew is, like, last year and this year is eliminating rounds 41 to 50. That usually meant for about 8 Canadians. So that total, and the last 5 and the previous 5 years that they had 41 to 50, there was an average of 8 Canadians. So that affected the last 2 years being down from the high of, what was the high? I think the high was 48 in 2002.
Yeah. All right. Last question. Anyone to watch for the Jays today? I mean, I realize we're in the final rounds, but is there anybody that didn't make it to the top 10 that you guys were looking at that still holds some interest for you today?
For me, that's a tough question to answer because the later you get into the draft, the more of a crapshoot it almost becomes, even though it's kind of always that way to begin with. I think they went out yesterday and they kind of went back to their style of drafting high school top ceiling guys. So to say that maybe they go after more college later in the draft, I don't see that necessarily happening. I think they went for their safe guys and the guys that they think they can ink up. So they may be a little bit more riskier today with some of their picks. Depending on the money that they have left over, out of the 9.5. We'll see what they can get done and what they end up using for other guys. But I really don't have anybody right now that I have an eye on, or that, you know, that either the team didn't select, be it yesterday or the day before. So it's still fun to kind of see what's going to happen. But I do think that they did a good job yesterday at really restocking the farm systems with some nice high school arms, and of course a couple of college guys as well.
Those first few guys yesterday, they've signed to some big schools, you know, Alabama and Tennessee.
That's
and
right.
Florida. I mean,
Charleston.
They you know, it might be a case. I know in some years a scouting director, I said, "Have you got enough money to do that?" And he said, "No, we got enough money to do two of the four or whatever, you know. So we'll whoever the first two into the pool, we'll take, you know. Like if the guy
sure.
wants to go to school, fine. So we'll see." We'll see. Like, I mean, if you're like that, like Pentecost, he was a seventh rounder at a high school from by Texas, and he went to Kennesaw State, and now this year he comes out in the first round. So
anything can happen.
Yeah.
Well, let's hope it's a good day today for Canadians. I was definitely hoping for more yesterday, so let's hope that that translates into a big day for that today. And I think with that, we'll wrap up today's episode. If you have any questions for us, please let us know. Email us at podcast@CanadianBaseballNetwork.com. Thanks for coming on the show again, Bob. We'll hopefully have you on later to review the final draftings of Day 3. Big thanks to our sponsors for their support. We could not do what we do without you. And we'll be back later on with more reactions and analysis on the draft. This is Peter Bean with Andrew Hendricks and Bob Elliott signing off.